Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Of course, our hearts go out again this morning to all the people of Japan, and we'll keep talking about it on and off throughout the show this morning as we do other things as well. Did you hear Yoko Ono on The Takeaway this morning, though? Great interview by John Hockenberry about Yoko's memory of devastation and rebuilding after World War II. Since most of you listening now didn't hear it, I thought I would just replay about 1 minute of Yoko Ono on returning to Tokyo after World War II as a child and on Japan's cultural ability to pick up the pieces and start over.
The Second World War, all the kids were evacuating in the country so that, you know, they don't have to be living in danger. And after the war, I came back from northern Japan that I was in. And the truck was just kind of running, you know. I said, "It's Tokyo now." So I just looked, and I couldn't believe it because the whole place was just a burnt field. No building, no nothing. And from then on, I realized that people are building little shacks, you know, from a sheet of metal, you know, like collecting sheets of metal and building shacks and living it. And it was like that. Now, that was not too long ago. I mean, it was long ago, but it's not centuries ago. And somehow Japan rediscovered its country, but also reconstructed the country. And, you know, they were very good at it.
Well, they certainly were.
And I think that that's the kind of spirit that the Japanese have. You know, very quiet, very understated, but at the same time, extremely efficient. And they're all workaholics.
What do you think, right?
Yoko Ono with John Hockenberry on The Takeaway this morning on the cultural resilience as well as the spooky specter of history in a different kind of way repeating itself at this moment. We will continue to follow Japan's nuclear crisis on the program this morning as it continues to dramatically change hour by hour. But first, Senator Bernie Sanders. Congress today is expected to finalize its latest temporary funding deal that will avert a government shutdown, but only for 3 more weeks. 50 House Republicans are voting no in open revolt against their leadership for agreeing to even this much compromise. Congressman Mike Pence of Indiana said bluntly yesterday, it's time to pick a fight.
I think it's time to take a stand for taxpayers and for future generations. And I will not vote for the short-term continuing resolution that is coming to the floor of the House today to make that statement. Things don't change in Washington until they have to. It's time to pick a fight.
Well, he's going to get his fight over the next 3 weeks. But our first guest today is from the other side politically, and yet he might understand the impulse. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, the only official socialist in Congress, picked a fight with his usual allies, the Democrats, in December over that budget compromise, which, as you remember, extended the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy for another 2 years and slashed the estate tax on very large estates, as well as extending unemployment benefits and some other things that the Democrats wanted. As you may remember, Sanders filibustered that agreement, and he filibustered in the old-fashioned way. He stood on the Senate floor and talked about the issue for more than 8.5 hours. Here is the final minute.
Let me conclude, and it has been a long day. Let me simply say that I believe the proposal that was developed by the President and the Republicans are nowhere near as good as we can achieve. I don't know that we are able ourselves to get the handful of Republicans that we need to say no to this agreement. But I do believe that if the American people stand up, and by the way, it may not just be Republicans, there may be some Democrats as well. If the American people stand up and say, we can do better than this, that we don't need to drive up the national debt by giving tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires, that if the American people are prepared to stand and we are prepared to follow them, I think we can defeat this proposal. I think we can come up with a better proposal which better reflects the needs of the middle class and working families of our country, and to me, most importantly, the children of our country. And with that, Madam President, I would yield the floor.
That from December 10th of last year, that filibuster is now a book called The Speech. Senator Bernie Sanders joins us now to talk about it, as well as the current budget precipice and Vermont leading the nation in dependency on nuclear power, by the way. Senator, it's nice of you to come on again. Welcome back to WNYC.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Funny enough, the filibuster is a tool that we've come to associate with Senate Republicans during the Obama administration because they've used it so much to actually prevent things from going through. Take us back. Why did you filibuster the December budget compromise even without a chance of actually stopping it?
Well, the truth is the Republicans didn't use the filibuster in the way we usually understand that term, what that term means. What they simply do is block and obstruct and obstruct and obstruct and threaten to make clear that we can't do business unless we get 60 votes. The reason that I went to the floor is not only because I thought the agreement established by the president and the Republicans was extremely unfair. The main point to be understood, and we don't talk about this very much, is that in America today we have the most unequal distribution of income and wealth of any major country on earth. We have a collapsing middle class, we have an increase in poverty, and we end up with 23%. We end up with the richest 1% earning 23% of all income, which is more than the bottom 50%. You have the top 1% owning more wealth than the bottom 90%. And it seemed to me when you have that kind of inequality, which is growing, you don't give more tax breaks to the richest people in this country, drive up the national debt, and ask our kids to have to pay that off.
And yet it's the Tea Party and the Republicans generally who gained so many seats in the 2010 election because those Americans who voted were more concerned with big government than that rampant and growing inequality. Why do you think people don't respond more than they do to the concentration of wealth issue?
Well, number one, it's not talked about a whole lot. You don't have much in the way. I don't think that's an issue that the President of the United States has raised. I don't know when he has raised it, if ever. It's not being raised in Congress. It's not being raised in the media. The truth of the matter is, what I think the elections in November were about is a lot of people are very angry. And they're angry because in many cases, they're working longer hours for lower wages than they used to. They look around them and they see that everything being equal, unless we change things, their kids are going to have a lower standard of living than they do. Their jobs have gone to China. They don't have any health care. They're angry. Unfortunately, in many cases, they don't know really why they're angry, what the causes of the problem are, which is in many ways what my speech was trying to bring about.
Your speech was 8 hours of nonstop talking, 8.5 hours. You should meet some of my relatives. Just kidding. But what was the experience like?
Well, it was, it's tough being up there with a national television camera on you for 8.5 hours, and you can't sit down and you can't go to the bathroom. It was tough, and by the time it was over, I was tired. But what I was very determined not to do is just to stand up there and waste time and read from the phone book. There is so much that's going on in our country that we don't talk about. We're the only country in the industrialized world without a national health care program. Our manufacturing sector is in rapid decline. We've lost 50,000 factories in the last 10 years. Education, infrastructure, all very, very serious problems. So it gave me an opportunity to bring together a number of themes that I've been talking about for many years.
You know, that compromise, though you filibustered it, was very popular in the polls among independents and Republicans and Democrats, and was widely seen as a reasonable trade-off to extend unemployment benefits and not raise taxes on employers when jobs are sorely lacking. And for only 2 years, as President Obama says, he's going to raise it again for the 2012 election.
Yeah,
and it helped revive his approval ratings as well. So is this really the issue to stake your historic claim to fame on?
Well, I think the issue is that while it may have been initially popular, because I think there is a part of the population that likes to make sure that the president is working with right-wing Republicans, and it's all very, very nice. If you read the speech, what you'll find is that much of what is happening today is exactly what I predicted would happen in December. And that is, if you give hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the wealthiest people, if you have a Republican Party that says the main thing that we have got to do is to cut spending, then you're going to be where we are today. And where we are today is the Republicans have passed the bill, as you know, H.R. 1 in the House, which would throw 200,000 kids off of Head Start, which would cut the Environmental Protection Agency by 30%, which would make Pell Grants, deny Pell Grants to or lower the benefits for millions of kids, cut back on the Social Security Administration, cut back on child care. So where we are today is exactly where I predicted that we would be, is you can't give huge tax breaks to rich people, drive up the deficit, and then say, oh, my goodness, we have to balance the budget. The way they're going to balance the budget is by decimating programs that low and moderate income people need, and that is exactly where we are today.
Senator Bernie Sanders, independent from Vermont, his speech, 8.5-hour filibuster against the tax cut compromise in December, is now out as a book called The Speech. And now we have government week to week, Senator. A new 3-week stopgap is expected to pass today, as you know. And after that, probably a final showdown on the House Republicans' demand for $61 billion in immediate cuts in the next 3 weeks. The Democratic Senate majority is nowhere close to that number. Do you see another compromise coming that you won't support?
The issue is not how many children we can throw off of Head Start or how many young people we can deny Pell Grants to. When we raise questions like that, we've already accepted the Republican logic that the only way to move toward a balanced budget or deficit reduction is by cutting programs. I don't believe that. I believe that when the wealthiest people in this country are paying an effective tax rate of about 16%, which is lower than most working people, it's the lowest in recent history, when we've given the top 2% many hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks, and when the people on top are doing phenomenally well, you know what? Instead of throwing kids off of Head Start or denying nutrition programs for low-income pregnant women, maybe you want to ask the wealthiest people in this country to pay a little bit more in taxes, which is why I've introduced legislation which would impose a 5.4% surtax on people whose incomes are over $1 million.
Are you voting? Did you vote for this latest stopgap, or did you vote no on that, too, to protest the lack of revenues in it?
That hasn't come to the Senate. The latest will probably be at the Senate today or tomorrow.
And I will vote against. You will vote against?
Yes.
Are there circumstances as we get toward the larger debate in the next 3 weeks under which you would filibuster again?
No, I think my filibustering for the year is probably over. But I am I'm doing everything that I can to make it clear that in the midst of a recession, when so many people are hurting, that it is absurd to cut programs for some of the most vulnerable people in our country and not ask the wealthiest people who are becoming wealthier to contribute to deficit reduction. We need a little bit of shared sacrifice here and not just take it out on the middle class and working families.
Senator, on another issue with the Japan nuclear crisis, America is taking stock of its nuclear plants as well. And I didn't know until I read it yesterday that your state of Vermont leads the nation in dependency on nuclear power with more than 70% of the state's electricity coming from it.
That's not accurate. We got about one-third of our energy from the one nuclear power plant that we have.
Has nuclear power served Vermont well, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of concern about the what we call the Yankee nuclear power plant, the southern part of the state near Brattleboro. And they have had a number of problems over the years. And, in fact, the key point, I think, to make about Vermont nuclear power is that last year, by an overwhelming vote, I think it was 24-6, the Vermont State Senate went on record as demanding that our nuclear power plant not be recommissioned. Ironically, that nuclear power plant is of similar design to the one in Japan where we're seeing that terrible tragedy right now. Our Senate has said, no, do not recommission it. Let's begin the process of shutting it down.
And Governor Schuman had that same position, I understand, and yet the NRC did just reapprove it for another 20 years, correct?
The NRC, yes, suggested that it be allowed to continue for another 20 years, but the NRC, as best that we can tell, has approved 58 straight requests to see nuclear power plants recommissioned. They have never rejected an effort. But I think in Vermont now, we have a situation where our state legislature says no. I think in terms of what's happening in Japan with a plant that, as I understand, that is pretty much the same design I think you're going to see mass opposition in the state of Vermont.
You're not going to have a 9.0 earthquake in Burlington, and you're certainly not getting a tsunami in White River Junction. So how relevant is the Japan situation to Vermont?
Excuse me?
How relevant?
You know, and no one predicted that we would have a 9.8% earthquake in Japan. Now, I'm sure we won't have a very large earthquake in Japan, in Vermont. I hope we won't. But you have the element of terrorism. You have human errors. I think what we have seen in Vermont for a number of years now is many, many problems with energy. And I would say that the majority of the people in the state of Vermont would rather get their energy from sustainable energies like wind, solar, geothermal, and biomass. We're leading the country in terms of energy efficiency. In my view, it is not a good idea to have a plant which is now 40 years old go for another 20 years, especially when this plant has already seen a number of problems.
And just to correct that stat that I gave before about the 70%, I guess the corrected figure is, according to the Nuclear Energy Institute, as of 2009, of all the U.S. states, Vermont ranks as the state where the highest percentage of total electricity generated, not used but generated, comes from nuclear power, and that's 72%. So can you confirm that, and does that make Vermont a net exporter of power for electricity?
Well, the nuclear power plant is in the very southern part of our state, and I expect that electricity will be going to New Hampshire and Massachusetts as well.
All right.
But I think in terms of Vermont's consumption of electricity from Yankee Nuclear, I think it's about 30%.
We're just about out of time. I'm just curious with your dissatisfaction with President Obama for making that Bush tax cut compromise that led to the filibuster that's now the book. Are you considering, or do you think any progressive Democrat should consider a primary challenge to him for 2012?
Well, I'm not a Democrat. I am the longest-serving independent.
Of course. Forgive me. I knew that.
I think, you know, if a Democrat, progressive Democrat wants to run, I think it would enliven the debate, raise some issues, and, you know, people have a right to do that. I've been asked whether I am going to be doing that, and I'm not. I don't know who is, but in a democracy, it's not a bad idea to have different voices out there.
Senator Bernie Sanders, independent from Vermont. Oh, by the way, we've had this conversation before, but we're getting a number of people calling in asking, what does he mean when he calls himself a socialist? Care to go over that for 30 seconds again?
Well, as you know, I'm sure, in Finland, Sweden, Norway, many of the European countries, they have had democratic socialist governments for a very long time, and those governments have been able to provide health care for all people, quality higher education at very little cost, in some cases free, very strong child care programs. To me, what democratic socialism is about is you have a government that represents, you know, everybody, including working people, not just the very wealthiest people in this country, and that we make sure that all people receive basic necessities of life, such as health care.
How did it get to be such a smear in this country?
Well, I think you went through the McCarthy period. I think you went through a period of where people equated democratic socialism, which is, again, what you've had in Scandinavia and many European countries for a long time, with communism. And that was an effort on the part of right-wing people to say anybody who talks about democratic socialism really believes in authoritarianism or communism.
Senator Bernie Sanders, independent from Vermont, his speech, 8.5-hour filibuster speech in December against the Bush tax cut compromise, is now a book called The Speech. Thank you so much for giving us this time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up next with the nuclear crisis continuing in Japan. We'll get a report on our New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut plants from WNYC's Bob Henley next. Remember, even before all this, Governor Cuomo campaigned on shutting down Indian Point, and even Governor Chris Christie yesterday took a certain stand against nuclear waste in New Jersey. You'll hear what it is. Stay with us.